Rob O'Hara. What's going on? We are here for the second episode of the month of June, making up for the month of May. We're here with a movie that, this isn't me saying, I read that potentially saved Sly's career at the time it came out. I don't know about that, but that's what I read. Rambo, First Blood, 1982. We talked about it on our last episode. We talked about a couple different trailers for different things, for the Dark Crystal TV show that's coming on Netflix, the What We Wish Was a Trailer for a Movie with the Dungeons and Dragons commercial, and then for Rambo, what is it, Rambo 5? It got us talking about Rambo, got me thinking about Rambo, and I was like, man, we should just do Rambo First Blood. None of the other ones. Although I will say that after watching this, I kind of wish I had time, although we kind of did this on spare of the moment, I kind of wish I had time to just even just skim through maybe the second, maybe the third one.
Yeah, it, you know, I think for me, they kind of all go downhill. Like, I think one is the best, you know, then two, and then three, and then I never saw the fourth one, and it didn't sound like we were going to see, either of us were that interested in seeing the fifth one, but I'm sure I'll see it. I'm sure I'll see it, you know. But yeah, it does, you know, it's, especially the first one, I mean, there's so much adrenaline and so much good story that, yeah, by the time you watch it, you're like, yeah, I want to watch the second one too. I also want to go kick some ass. I also want to get a giant knife.
So we had a discussion, I think it was yesterday during the day before I watched it, or maybe, I don't know, whatever, it was recently. And I was like, you know, I'm going to watch this probably with my oldest son. He's 17. But I was like, I said, what are your opinions on it? I mean, I'll look, I haven't seen the movie in so long. I was like, my younger son, he's 11. I'm like, I know this is like right up his alley of stuff that he would like, because I mean, this came out in 82. So I was only eight when it came out. So but I saw it on HBO. So let's say I was 9 and a half by the time it came out on HBO. Right. I can't remember.
Right, sure.
I don't know what the turnaround was. I don't know if you remember, from a movie being out in the theaters to when it would come out on cable HBO.
I don't really remember, but it doesn't seem like it was that long, you know? You know, I think they made their money off of rentals, like VHS, like it would go pretty quick to VHS, you know, and then, yeah, I don't really know.
Yeah, so I haven't seen it in so long. But anyways, I thought, well, I'm going to watch it with my younger boy. And Ethan, he kind of sounded like he wanted to, but then he was like, yeah, I'm going to go up in my room and play whatever video game. You know what it is? We've been on this Star Wars The Clone Wars kick that it's coming out, I think, this fall, maybe, or is it, I'm not really sure when like the Clone Wars is coming back on, but my sons and I were all big fans of Clone Wars, and I would watch it with the boys. So then he went, I think he bought a game on Steam or something, so he was like, he didn't want to watch it. And then I was like, I talked to you, and I think we both kind of, not that I need Rob O'Hara's approval on anything, but you know, I mean, you kind of like hash out ideas with your friends or whatever. And I kind of thought the same thing. I'm like, it's, I mean, yeah, it was violent, but I mean, he's seen things like I told you, like he's seen all the Lord of the Rings and just some of the other movies, the superhero movies, you know? So I'm like, I'm just going to let him watch it, you know? And, he wasn't into it. He liked it until he thought that Rambo was killing all the cops, and he was just he's like, I'm checking out, Dad, I don't like this. And I'm like, Gabe, only one guy dies. Just one. All the other ones survive. I mean, they got sticks in their legs and stuff.
So they may have some rehab time, but yeah, I was surprised. I did not remember the fact that so many people lived, that basically everybody lived except for the one guy who brought it upon himself.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So I hadn't seen this in a long time. I bet you the last time I saw this, I was probably, I was eight when it came out. So probably like say 9 or 10, probably was like maybe 14 at the latest, 13. Like I have not seen this in a long time, but certain scenes stuck in my head.
Right. So I'll tell you, I rewatched it. Actually, I rewatched it earlier today. I haven't seen it in a long time. I would say at least 20 years. And what was surprising to me was, right off the bat, was the pacing. Because the way I remembered it was the first third of the movie was Rambo getting harassed by the sheriff and getting thrown in jail and getting, you know, kind of not, I guess you could say tortured, but, you know.
Yeah, it seemed like it was longer, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I looked, you know, when he breaks out of the jail, they're going to, one of the deputies or one of the officers there is going to forcefully shave John Rambo and get him ready for his court appearance.
Dry.
And he sees the razor, and he has a flashback to Vietnam when he was cut while he was a prisoner of war. And he breaks out, he steals this motorcycle, which is really the first crime that he really committed, you know, and takes off on this motorcycle. And I just happened to look at the timestamp, and that was 18 minutes into the movie. Yeah. I would have bet money that was, you know, half hour at least, you know. Well, first of all, right off the bat, I was surprised that this movie is, I would call it Sean-sized. It was 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It's I think 93 with the credits. So, yeah, I really thought the first third of it was, I guess in my mind I had split it up as the first third was him in the police station. The middle third was him in the forest and in the mine shaft, you know, and then the last third was when he comes back to the town to destroy the town. So yeah, my perception of how long those parts were was really off.
Right. So in what I kind of remember of the movie was, like you said, like the he's antagonized, right? And then he just goes like crazy. But I, as I noticed watching the movie, I was like, you know what? The movie actually start. I mean, the soundtrack, like I always love soundtracks to movies.
Mm-hmm.
The soundtrack is very, it's not like super happy, fun, uplifting, but it's not that, that music that you hear at the score throughout the movie, that kind of like serious, on edge music. It's kind of happy music. And he actually, as he walks into this like little, it looks like he's like on a lake or something, coming up to a house because he's looking for an old, I don't want to say so much war buddy, but like in his command or whatever
platoon,
it was.
Platoon or whatever, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And when he stops at the kind of like the hilltop looking down at the lady putting up her laundry, he kind of smiles. So like you see that, so I guess my point is I always thought of Rambo looking back as being just this crazy militaristic guy, but really he's not. He was kind of pushed and snapped into a way that he used to live, right? Because he's happy, he's looking, there's like the smile and everything. And I noticed that I watched it once yesterday, and then I kind of skimmed through it today, wrote some notes down, which of course are downstairs. But I skimmed through it at work on my tablet, and I actually noticed it today. I didn't even notice it yesterday watching it. So I was like, that's interesting. He's not this animal crazy guy. Obviously that's in there and it comes out, and he's, I guess you could say damaged, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is really, I think before, I don't know when the term PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder really came like into the common vernacular, I guess, but that, I mean, that's obviously what this is that, you know, he has these flashbacks that are triggered, when these guys are, you know, beating him up and stuff. But yeah, so it kind of deals with that. Like it does show that scene at the beginning, he is legitimately happy, you know, and I think people forget about that. You know, you talked about watching this with your kids. I mentioned this to both of my kids, that I was going to watch Rambo and ask them if they wanted to watch it. And neither one was interested. And I asked them what they thought Rambo was about. And they both said, oh, you know, it's this guy that he goes overseas and he just has a machine gun with a million bullets. And, you know, he takes on entire like army, like the entire, you know, Iraq army or something. And so it's funny that that's what kids who haven't seen the movies, or maybe other people who haven't seen the movies, that that's their perception mm-hmm. of what Rambo is. And that's kind of what Rambo became, almost like a caricature later on, you know. But this movie is, I mean, it is an action movie, but it's really kind of a serious movie with some deep topics.
Yeah. I mean, because, I mean, that was a time, not only during the war, it was, you know, we weren't going to get like political, but like it was, there was a lot of controversial things going on at the time where people supported, some people didn't. The names, like he says at the end, people spitting at me, calling me baby killer and all these vile names. And that, so, you know, when he comes into this town, I believe it's the town of Hope. And, you know, the sign, I can't remember what it says now. I'm really upset that I'm on my notes, but it was just, when you read the sign of him walking into the town, it gives you this, it implies like, come on here, this is where you can make a new beginning or so, you know, I can't remember the name of it, but it said like, welcome to Hope. Right. And it's the opposite feelings that he gets. And the sheriff, I mean, Teasel is, he's a dick anyways, because you and they show that when he's saying hi to people in the town when he first comes out of the police station and gets his car, and he says hi to some guy and he's like, oh, hi sheriff, he's like, under his breath, he's like, you gonna take a bath this week or something like that, you know what I mean? Like
he's a small town cop, you know, and he's there to keep things clean, keep things running or whatever. I thought it was the only problem. So let me back this up. When I was a kid and I just got my driver's license, there was a time, one time I got pulled over and basically, and I don't know that the town I grew up in is as small as Hope, but it was a fairly small town. And basically what the officer said was he wanted to search my car. And I didn't know any better, right?
You're like, why are you pushing me?
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I got this Rambo knife I got for the flea market. But I said, well, I haven't done anything. And he told me, look, either I can search your car or I can put you in the back of my car. I can get a warrant. I can do all this stuff and search your car anyway. So I just was like, okay, I guess search my car. I didn't have anything to hide. And I came home that night and told my parents, and my dad was livid. He was like, you know, that, like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to let a cop search your car. He doesn't have a right, you know, all this stuff. And so I agree with that. Like, I agree with there, you have certain rights. You are allowed to, if you're standing on public property, you can film police officers while they're doing things. You don't have to let an officer search your car if he doesn't have probable cause. But here's the thing. You can also push those issues when there's not really an issue that's worth pushing for. Right. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I mean, if you're filming officers doing something and they turn around and they say, you know, you need to stop or we're going to arrest you. Now you have to decide, like, is it worth to continue filming this officer doing this? Is it worth going to jail to prove this point? And, right. And it might be. Some people, it might be, or that, you know.
Well, that's the thing, too. I think it would depend on the circumstances, right? You know, obviously, if it's something you feel like, yeah, I need to film this because they're not acting right or whatever. Yeah, obviously. But like you say, I mean, they're going to, if they are irritated, they're going to come up with any. They'll come up with something that we don't know we can defend against that they can arrest you for, right?
Right.
So
it's
right.
So my problem, the only problem I have with Rambo, I mean, as the character, is he sees that he's not wanted in this town. It's made clear to him about three times. I mean, when he walks into town, the first thing, the sheriff comes right to him and says, what are you doing? Who are you here? You're not here for anybody. Where are you going? Let me give you a ride to the edge of town, you know? And then Rambo says that, you know, I was really wanting something to eat. And the sheriff says, well, there's a place 30 miles down the road, you know? So, I mean, so Rambo has, he has gotten the message. He's not welcome in Hope. There is no hope for John Rambo in this town. However, when the sheriff drops him off, he turns around and walks right back into town. Right there where the sheriff can obviously see
him. Well, he does hesitate. Like he's thinking for a second.
Yeah.
And I know what you're saying, but I actually like this about the character because it shows to me, it shows the character, you know, he's done all this for the country, right? He's done all these things for the government.
Right.
He didn't, as he says, I didn't ask to do, you know, I didn't ask it from you. You asked it of me, or whatever the line is.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's instantly, you know, the sheriff asks him, you know, you're looking for somebody or you're visiting somebody. And then he's like, you know, wearing that flag on your shirt or your coat like that and the hair, you're asking for trouble. And I think I like the fact that his character is he's proud of who he is and the things mm-hmm. he did that he was asked to do. Not so much, maybe he's not, we don't know in the psyche of it, maybe not so much proud of the things he did over in NAM, but he's proud of his service, right? He did what he was asked to do, and now he's being treated this way, which I think reflects on a way of a lot of vets, maybe even still today, with controversial wars that we've had recent and things we're engaged in now, can feel mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. So when he snaps in the police station, you know, when they are trying to shave him and stuff, I feel like it was obviously building to that point, but that's where it starts. You know, it starts where he's like, you know what? No, I do have a right. I do have a right to be in this town because I fought for this country. I do have a right to go to this diner. It's just that, and I'm not saying that he doesn't have a right, and obviously that is his character, right? It's just that when he does that, he has to know it's not going to end well. I mean, the sheriff's not going to go, he's not going to do a 180 and go, you know what? Let me buy you a sandwich, Rambo. That's not happening, you know? So I did think of it goes very quickly into the small town cops performing some pretty mean behavior on just a guy that was arrested on essentially no charges.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they obviously have issue with the way he looks, and maybe they were of, you know, maybe they were on the side of the people that would, you know, judge him for what he did and, you know, be those name callers type of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I don't know what the maybe the age gap was between John Rambo and some of these officers. I mean, but then you have like a character and it's really weird because I'm not a real big, I think it's David Crusoe. Right. I'm not a real big fan of his acting generally, but I actually liked him in this movie and I felt bad for him in this movie because he was the only one in that station really who was trying to be like, you know, kind of it's not pleading, but kind of like, come on, he means it. He's going to do like, you know what I mean? Like trying to get Rambo to just cooperate. Right.
Yeah.
But he also is not a fan of the tactics that Teasel and some of the other guys are using either, you know, and we see the confrontations that he has with the other officers when they're out and, you know, hunting him down.
It doesn't help him in the forest.
No, it didn't.
but yeah, you know, one of the things, so, this is normally when we do this podcast, I can't say, hey, and I also read the book, but this is a book that I read. I read this in high school. And I think I did a book report over it, but one of the things that I think probably it was prodding from my dad. I think he had read the book, you know, and then
right.
And then suggested I read it or something. But one of the things that I remember from reading it is that Teasel was in the book served in the Korean War, and so there's kind of this thing of it was like the two different generations, you know what I mean? Like the Korean War guy versus the Vietnam War guy, you know, and how each one had different thoughts or whatever. And that doesn't, I don't think they ever mentioned that in the movie. It, you know, it's more just like, well, he's a small town.
Yeah. You know what? Actually,
more of a sheriff.
I was looking up just some trivia and just some, I actually found like a Rambo wiki and they talk about that. And they talk about, I think it is, after they think that Rambo is dead in the mine, right? And then it shows back Teasel back in the sheriff's office. I guess behind him when he's sitting at his desk, there's a couple of different medals, and someone kind of broke down like they were military medals of like, you know, kind of like a higher you know, medals that they weren't just like your normal, not that I don't know what medals are, but you know what I mean? They were like, they meant something and it kind of referenced it. And they, and I think that's what they were just trying to throw a nod maybe to the book that way.
Yeah.
But there's definitely no, there's definitely no implying that, that that's the case in the movie for Teasel.
Right. Right. So we have, you know, the first escape, right? We have Rambo. He escapes from the jail. He hops on the motorcycle. He leads them on a chase. They chase him around, you know. And then we get to the part where, as a kid, that I associate with Rambo, which is now he's got his knife. We're going to talk about this.
I would have thought it was the motorcycle chase that you
Well, I love the motorcycle chase. Don't get me wrong. I love the motorcycle chase.
You breeze over. I mean, we don't have to take long on, but that scene I thought was actually pretty cool. There was a couple parts that seemed like, all right, Hollywood kind of far-fetched, like he kept pulling like wheelies and stuff, but then again, maybe when you take off that fast, I never rode a motorcycle, so maybe he would, but I thought that part was pretty awesome, especially when he like kind of tackled the guy off the motorcycle.
Yeah, he just grabs the guy and he's like, hello.
Yeah, but I love how Teasel was like driving in like the, it looked like a cow pasture and trying to get all these different parts. Mm-hmm. And even when his car slowly slides down and then flips over and I know it's been talked about before in other podcasts about all the injuries that happen during this movie. But I mean, the one, I didn't recognize it was this part where he elbows the one police officer and then he's wearing the, like the Band-Aid or tape over his nose. Cause he really had a broken nose. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. One of the trivia things I read was that, the car was not actually supposed to roll over in that scene.
It looks like it was very like slow and accidental.
Yeah, it's very slow. And then at the end. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. So we do have this cool chase scene, you know, but Rambo ends up in the forest, you know, and this is where, like, when I think of when you said, "Hey, I want to watch Rambo," this is what I'm thinking of, like Rambo in the forest, making, you know, traps, just surviving with his knife, making clothes. He finds some string and makes a belt and a little thing to hold it, like. That, so as a kid, I know that I did a podcast one time about the creek that was behind my house, you know. So I would say in my neighborhood, there were two groups of kids. There were the ninja warriors, right? And then there were the army guys. But if you think about it, we were all doing the same thing. We were all being Rambo. Yeah. We were all running around down in this creek, like in these, you know, high weeds and stuff. We all had, you know, everybody had a little pocket knife or something. And you would, then we even like made traps. Like I remember that my next door neighbor had this, a little fort, and you had to climb out of the creek to get to the fort. And so you would pull on tree limbs to like climb up, and they had put bricks up on these tree limbs. So if you pulled a tree limb, a brick would fall down on a kid, you know, that's not safe. But anyway, yeah, I mean, when we were kids and we saw Rambo, this is the part we were doing. You know what I mean? Like, this is what made us all want to get, and before this, I never wanted to own a pair of camouflage pants.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, like I never wanted to go out in the creek and wade around and hide and wait for somebody to walk by and then jump out and scare them, you know? So this is what I associate, at least this movie, this Rambo.
Yeah. This definitely. Yeah. For me too, as well. I mean, I grew up on a street that had a bunch of kids on it and we had, I think I've talked about it before, but we called it the back alley, but not like, you know, your city where there's dumpsters and stuff. It was more just a backyard ended, and then there was a fence, and then there was like just overgrown grass and like a little wooded part. I mean, little wooded part. It was like tiny. And then someone else's backyard backed up to that. So you had like maybe, oh God, it's been so long since I've been back there, but let's say it was like maybe 30, 40 yards wide, if that. mm-hmm. then it was like the whole length of the block. So, and we would just, we would play war back there. We didn't call it Rambo, but yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, that had a lot to do with it, with the trying to set up the traps and stuff like that. And I, you know, I was saying in the beginning, there was a couple scenes that like really, that I did remember, and I don't know why, but that canvas that he grabs and cuts with his knife and makes into like whatever you want to call that, like a poncho. That was like one of the scenes that stuck in my head, and I thought it was the coolest thing. I never did it when I was playing war, but I always thought it was really cool, and I don't know why.
It's, you know, it's like a lot of things where on TV or in a movie, they grab a canvas, then cut it twice with a knife, and all of a sudden it's a perfectly fitting, you know, thing. Whereas, you know, Halloween, I would tell my mom, hey, I want this costume to look like Rambo, and then I would look like, you know, a giant green pillow puff or something. I'd be like, what happened? You know?
And yeah.
It works a lot better in the movies, I think. But so Rambo, when he gets arrested, has this knife tucked into the back of his pants, and the sheriff pulls it out, and he's like, oh, you know, what's this? He's like, oh, it's my hunting knife. What do you hunt with it? Name it. I want to say the next summer, when you went to the flea market, there were 1,000 Rambo knives. Every place at the flea market had a Rambo knife. Some of them were black, some were camouflage. They were all the same. They had the handle, you know, the hollow handle with the little hilt. It had the big blade on there.
The saw, right? The wire saw.
Yeah, you got the saw. Yeah, there's all different kinds of stuff on there, which, I mean, I think all I ever did was, I can't even think. I might have cut like a, I don't know, an old screen door somewhere.
How many did you have? I had three.
I just had one. I had three.
Well, I had three now. I had one. So I had one, and it was camouflage. My brother had one. It was black with a silver blade. Mine was camouflage with a black blade. And then I have another black one with a silver blade that I got from my father-in-law, of all people. A long story. But so I've got all three of them now. They're hidden in my house. Yeah. But and I don't know why I have them. I mean, we go camping. I'm not taking it camping next weekend. I'm not, you know, it had the leg, you know, the leg string, so you could like tie it to your bottom. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Flop you tied it to your leg. And then it was, you had to have the compass on the end, which they show him using, you know, which, I mean, whenever we played, army or war or whatever, I never got far enough where I couldn't see my house. So I didn't really need a compass to find my way back. You know, it was still, you'd be like, yep, that way's still north. All right, cool. And then it was hollow, right? Because inside you would have what, like matches?
Matches. And there was the wire that hooked up. Cause when you unscrewed the top, which had, it was kind of like a, not really a ball, but it had the compass in there. Right. And you unscrewed that, or when you would screw it back on, there was like two rings, almost like keychain rings. And then inside was like a wire, a saw wire. So you would hook it to these rings and you could hold it, and then you could, you know, cut your bamboo down. Right. And then you had like about four matches that when you tried to strike them on anything, they just crumbled. And I had different things in different knives though, because on one of them, the compass was actually, you could use it as like a bobber, but then the other one, you didn't have that ability. It was just a round compass that sat in there. And then the one came with fish. They both came with fish hooks, a little bit of fishing string.
Oh, okay.
And I think one came with like a little, like not a bag, but almost like, remember those little, plastic, rubbery kind of parachute guys that would come with a parachute on already strung up.
Yeah.
It almost had like a that material stuffed in there. I'm not really sure why. Maybe to catch water? I don't know.
Maybe wipe.
I mean, I didn't really go far like you, so I didn't have to use it to survive.
Well, here's the thing is that I got my knife after all the hype had died down from Rambo and some other kid didn't want his anymore. So by the time I got it, mine didn't have any of the cool stuff in it. But I knew, I mean, you wanted to put something in there. And so if I remember right, I think that's where I put my D&D dice for a while.
That's kind of...
So, like, if you're survival, you know, and then you have to make a savings throw, you just pull out a dice, roll up.
That's actually kind of cool. Like, if I ever get back into D&D, like, they have stores all over now, like gaming stores. Come in there with your Rambo, you know, your survival knife. And they're like,
you just stick it on the table and then pull the dice
all fall out. That's crazy.
So, yeah, we got Rambo running through the woods. And then, you know, he does this thing. It reminded me a lot of Terminator 2, which is obviously after this. But, you know, when John Connor as a kid, you know, and he's got T2. And he's like, I will kill everybody. And he goes, no, you can't kill people, you know. And so he just shoots people in the knees. And then at the end, he goes, they'll live, you know. So he does that thing where he stops the problem. You know, he stops the people that are attacking him, but he doesn't kill them. And so I had completely forgot that he doesn't kill all the guys in the forest. But he does stop them. And then, you know, he says at the end, like, I could have killed them. And this is where, really, I mean, as a character, the sheriff really makes a bad decision. And he's just too proud, yeah. I guess, to walk away. And, you know, his buddy has died. His buddy fell from the helicopter. I mean, his buddy brought about his own death. But, you know, Rambo says to him, let it go. I think he says it twice. Yeah. He says, let it go. And I think any sane person would be like, you know what? You're right. I mean, because I don't know. Maybe it's like when the bully beats you up, and then you think, well, if I'd only done this different, or if I brought more friends, I'll get even. I'll come back. You know, but you're fighting Rambo on his turf. Yeah,
and he even says that in town, you're the law or something like that. Out here, I am.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so like, you know, there's some hesitation, like I was saying, from like David Crusoe's character. I think it's Mitch, maybe. He's hesitant when they find out who he is, but Diesel's still like, come on, it's one guy. But even before that, like when they're like tracking him down and everything, they have the dogs, like they're kind of, and I like this. They're kind of just like, not nonchalant about it, but they're not real nervous. It's almost like, yeah, we just got to go get this crazy guy. Come on. But as stuff starts happening, and then they start going, oh my God, especially like when they find he has a gun after he shoots the dogs that come out, you know? And and that's the other thing too. Like I thought that this part, I mean, it was a long part, but it almost is like he just systematically, let's just say, puts down each guy really quickly, right? He gets one and he's got the guy in the legs, right? And it's funny because I'm like, this guy looks familiar. He was kind of more of the huskier of the deputies or whatever. And he was on Miami Vice. I looked him up. He's on Miami Vice. So I knew him from somewhere. I thought it was 21 Jump Street, but then I'm like, I never watched 21 Jump Street. So, but I remember there was a guy that kind of seemed similar to him, but with like a more of a mullet. It was like, I thought this was even longer too, this part. Where it got long for me was like, when he started going,
I bet I know what you're about.
When he started
to
going into the mine after they think they blow it up, like we see him in there, and I'm like, why is this taking so long? I mean,
I only thought that was like, I mean, I thought they blew it up, you know, and then because you cut to the other scene because now you have Colonel right
Troutman.
Colonel Troutman shows up, and you know, so now he's talking to Teasel, and he basically says, you know, I created this guy. I'm the only guy that can take him out, you know, which again reminded me of all the ninja movies, you know, where they're like, only a ninja can stop a ninja. So I thought of that. But so, I mean, you have that scene, but that's really all you need enough time for, is for them to have that conversation and then to say, we're going to go find him, and for the other guys to blow up, you know, whatever. I mean, the mine thing seemed to take up a long time.
It really
time.
Did, of him just going through the mine shaft and the rats. And you know what I did like too, is like, as tough as he is, right? And the dude is amazes me how jacked he is, right? When he takes off his shirt in there, and Crusoe's character again being like the only sane one in there, is like, you know, oh my God, man, we should tell Teasel about this. And the other guy's like, clean them. He said, clean them up, and whales them in the back. Now clean them up. But it's, well, actually, let me just step back a little bit. The part, the sheriff guy or the deputy or whoever, whatever, the police officer that dies from the helicopter, right? I was so happy that when he fell, it wasn't the Wilhelm scream. Like, I was like, yes, good on you guys for not using that. Or even when Rambo fell off the cliff and then he goes through the trees, you know, but he does show, like, he's kind of a puss when it comes with them rats, you know, jumping on him. Like, he's freaking out and everything.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that. You know, he's not all, you know, hard as,
he's not all hard as nails. He's not superhuman. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And he, you know, he shows that he's hurt, like when he falls and hits those, you know, trees on the way down, you know, he's trying to recuperate. Yeah. So he's not like, I guess this is, I guess where it's different than a ninja movie, right? Because I mean, he is a human being, yeah. You know what I mean? He's not, you know, invincible or anything. So, yeah, so they, those National Guard guys come and they're like, I thought this part was really, it was humorous, but it was also true to life. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they're shooting at Rambo and then Rambo shoots back. He got a gun and then the leader of the National Guard, you know, is like, all right, Willie, you run up there. And he's like, I'm not going up there. Are you crazy? Like, I got to work tomorrow. I'm not doing this.
Yeah, and I think Teasel, or maybe it's on him, refers to him as like those weekend warriors. And that's kind of how I looked at him growing up, is just because I had a teacher. Like, my sixth grade teacher was, you know, a reserve guy. And he would even say, like, yeah, I got to go play Army this weekend and stuff like that. But then I work with guys who actually had been redeployed as the reserves, you know, and they've had a actually, you know, so it wasn't, but these guys definitely play into that. Like, oh, they're just weekend warrior guys. Like, they were just, you know, running the local mill and stuff like that. And they had to come out there.
Right. And I'm the same way. I have a coworker who's part of the Guard, and he posts on Facebook the things that he's doing and stuff. And They're serious guys, you know what I mean? They're going out, they're doing work, they're doing things for our country. And girls, absolutely. But as a kid, I think a lot of people downplayed it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that was my perception as a kid, just because, just like what you said, that's what people would say. Oh, I'm going to go play Army.
You know
what I mean? I had a manager that was the same way. He was like, oh, I just do that so I can, you know, get benefits and stuff like that. So that was my perception, just because that was a perception they gave.
I wonder
to me.
If that is because I had heard this from family members about other family members. I wonder if that was a thing, like, back during, like, the Vietnam War. You know, a lot of people didn't want to go, right? And so I know of a family member, you know, or we'll say friend of the family who didn't want to get drafted, so they had joined like a National Guard or something like that in hopes to not get deployed, right? Where this other friend of the family's brother was drafted and went over. So there was always like this, like, I don't want to say animosity, but more of a, yeah, he played Army, I was in it type of thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, sure. Yeah, I could see that. You know, I could see that.
Yeah,
from that
and that's
point
not
of view.
That's
sure.
not you or I saying that. It's just what we grew up,
right,
with.
Right,
so.
Right.
But it was amusing. Yeah, it was amusing to see the change in these guys from just kind of like, yeah, we're just going to go out here and hunt this crazy dude to like absolute terror.
Right. When it was easy pickings, you know, when it was, you know, hey, you get to run out and now finally you get to shoot a gun and do all this. You know, they were all in. But
yeah,
the minute he shot back, they were out.
Well, I was going to say, like, I like the whole Troutman twist, coming to get his boy, as he says, not knowing, you know, he's kind of lost touch with everybody. He didn't know that everybody else was dead, you know, and I think this also plays into John Rambo's anger is, you know, I forget which guy he's talking about, but he's like, yeah, he died too. And he's like, no. He's like, no, he died in a war when he came home, like, from cancer, probably from Agent Orange or something like that, you know? And so there's like this anger of everything they went through And now again, dealing with what he's dealing with now, but you know, there are, like you said earlier, there's parts where you go as a character, come on, man. Like when the guy does fall the helicopter and dies and they have him in their sights from up in the ravine and they're telling him don't move. And all he's saying is, I didn't do nothing. Like, no, right? That's when you get on your, you know, your knees, put your hand behind your head and just wait for him to come down and take your chances. And like, come on, you know, you're screwed.
Right. Yeah.
You're not walking away.
No, they're bringing in, I mean, now they've got helicopters. Now, they, you know, it's escalating. Mm-hmm. It keeps escalating and they have more resources than you have.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like, you know, my dad used to always say, like, he would always say, don't try to outrun the cops, because even if you can outrun a cop, you can't outrun their radio. You know what I mean? And that being that, you know, if you do try, you're on the interstate, you try to outrun a cop, they're just going to call ahead and get you, you know, at the next exit or whatever. So it's that kind of thing. Like, you could survive. Like, Rambo might be able to disable these six guys or whatever, but they're just going to call in 200, which is what they do. And if that doesn't work, they're going to call in 2,000, you know?
Bringing a lot of body bags then.
Which is the advice. I do like, I think I like Troutman in this movie, you know, and, you know, he tries without saying it. I mean, he's in a tough spot because he's trying to get Teasel to back up. Well, first he tells Teasel flat out. He's like, let Rambo go. Let him go. Let him slip through. And I thought this was really interesting because you were saying, you know, family and friend of the family. I will say a friend of the family. We have a friend of the family who has gone to jail multiple times for petty theft, you know, but just seems to continually get in trouble, right? And there was one time where this person broke into one of my family members' homes, and we knew who it was, and you know, we didn't have any hard proof, but it was really obvious, you know, and we went to the police and said, this person broke into our house and this person did all this. And the police said, you know what? You don't have any proof. There's no physical evidence, but here's what'll happen. In a week or two, we'll pick this person up, you know, on a traffic thing or, you know, shoplifting. I mean, it, you know, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, that is literally exactly what happened. And so when Troutman says, let Rambo go, let him win this, you know, what do they say? Like, you know, lose the fight, but win the war or whatever, you know, he says, let Rambo go, let him walk. We'll pick him up in some small town. Nobody else will get killed. No. And
yeah,
and
he'll be working at a gas station or something like that.
Yeah. And Teasel won't do it. He's too invested. He's not going to let it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And he even tells Teasel too, like, because Teasel says, oh, you're here to save your boy. And he's like, I think he says something like, I'm not here to save him. I'm here to save you. Right. He's a killing machine.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's true, is that you basically, you know, activated this guy.
Yeah.
You've triggered him and he's not going to stop and you're not going
to
stop.
Yeah. You know? That's a great way to say it, really, to set for the movie, is that they activated something that had been, that was being suppressed, right? That,
mm-hmm.
So I think for me, all of this from the beginning, all through this, you know, when we get to this tunnel part, that's where I kind of, I was like, okay, this scene's taking a little long, as we just said, but then there's the part where he hijacks the truck, right? There's like a little, there's like two or three trucks, right? Military trucks coming, and he jumps in the on top of the truck, then he climbs in, hijacks it, but before he kicks the guy out, he's asking what's in the back, and I think he says like an M60 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It's a big beefy gun.
Yeah, it is.
So he starts driving this thing, he's taking it over, right? And he comes to like a roadblock, police cars all over, he smashes through the roadblock. This is kind of impressive, almost jumps like Dukes of Hazzard, kind of, right?
Right.
You see the whole thing, so it happens for real, which looked kind of cool because it looked like it was going to flip and then it kind of settled out,
right?
And so he crashes through that, and then it's like we cut to night and he's pulling into town, and I'm thinking, all right, you see him hit a couple cop cars, but there's a whole ton of them there. And even if there wasn't, to go back to your your father's analogy of like, you can't outrun them. There's going to be more. Like, it's right. Almost as though he shook everybody, right? And now he's in town.
That part, it seemed like there was a jump or something because there's 10 cop cars there. He runs into one. I mean, that leaves 9 cars that they should be chasing him.
Even if he runs into 8, there's still one that can chase. Like, nobody's chasing him. He rolls into town like nothing.
Yeah. And it's like a 2-lane highway. So it's not like he's, took the next exit or it's not like you go, we have a all points bulletin for a Chevy. I mean, it's for a 2.5-ton military truck. It's going to be easy to spot.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And now he can set up, he can get the gun, get 2 ammo cache boxes, light the thing on fire and set up shop.
I'll tell you what didn't make sense when I was watching that scene, and maybe there's an explanation and I just missed it or something, but okay. Maybe he traveled further than I thought while he was in the woods because he starts off in the town of Hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has the chase on the motorcycle. He goes to the woods, which you're assuming are right outside of town.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. He hides on this mountain in the woods. Then he gets caught in the mine. He comes out of the mine. When he comes out of the mine, he steals this military truck. And then he drives this truck forever. I mean, it's daytime when he leaves, and it's nighttime when he stops, and he ends up back in the town.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure. I don't know. Maybe I missed something.
I think, like you said, maybe something has been cut and spliced together. Because I did read like that he wasn't, that Stallone wasn't happy with everything, and he wanted things done differently to have the other characters kind of tell the story, I guess, to a degree. So, I mean, I'm sure there's... It just seemed like a really big, continuity error at that point.
Yeah. There's something missing there. Yeah.
But I was also at that point going, okay, not that I'm ready for it to end, but I really enjoyed all the rest. At this point, I was already like, this is going to get kind of hokey, isn't it? And I thought it kind of did at this point.
Yeah. I was like, the first thing is he escapes from the jail. I'll give you that, and he outruns one cop on one motorcycle. I'll give you that. Then he goes into the woods. He basically traps 5 deputies. I'm like, okay, I'll give you that. Now we're sending 200 guys in or whatever. And I thought this is getting a little much. And now it's like, now he's running around, First of all, I don't know how nobody thought that he was going to go to the police station, which is the one place that it's the one place in this town that he's been, mm-hmm. and it's the one place that he has a problem with. And the other thing is that nobody's guarding the one gun store in town. So these are the two things that he attacks, is the ammunition shop, which he blows up like a 4th of July fireworks thing, and then goes back to... the sheriff's office. I don't know. It kind of seemed like, where is everybody at that point?
Yeah. They're all having a barbecue at the roadblock. I guess they're waiting for him to come through. They thought it was just some guy that was,
he'll come back.
They didn't think it was him. Oh, that's not him. That was Johnny. He's had a couple pops. I don't know. Yeah. The ending, I was like, his speech is iconic, I guess, that, I remembered that with Troutman about, why he feels the way he did and the things that happened over in Nam and this and that. But this whole end town thing, I just didn't really like that part.
Right. So I told you that I read the book when I was in high school. So at the end of the book, I think Teasel is wounded. And Troutman goes back in. Rambo tells him the whole speech. He tells him all these things, right? And so at the end, Troutman basically comes out of the building. And he goes over to Teasel. And he's like, yeah, I put him down. So at the end of the book, Troutman shoots Rambo.
Really?
And kills him.
Does Rambo know it's going to happen? Like, is it one of those things where he knows he's a killing machine, and that he, you know what I mean? Like, I'm wondering, how does that play out? Or does he just sneak it?
Yeah, I think he shoots him in the back of the head, I think. But I know he shoots him with a shotgun.
Oh, he assassinates, assassination style?
But here's the thing, is that Troutman knows that Rambo is never going to come, like, he has snapped, and he's, like, he's created a killing machine that's never going to fit back in society. And so there's never going to be, like, Rambo's never going to get a regular job at a desk. You know?
He's really not going to get that gas station job, is he?
No. He's going to work at Whataburger at the drive-thru.
He's going to push carts for a little bit out in the rain. And
he goes into boxing and fights Mr. T.
He's a real... wrong movie.
Different. So at the end of Rambo, I mean, that's... So I think that some of the movie is like, well, they know they're not going to do that because if you do that, you can't have a Rambo 2, you know, if it makes... So they're not going to kill the guy at the end of it, so...
Makes sense.
Right. So, you know, it's a little different, and it kind of has a little bit different ending, and they walk him out in cuffs, you know, and he kind of exchanges a little glance with the...
Oh, with Teasel,
who's down there, you know, and they let him walk out, and they got the two guards behind him, which I thought, again, I mean, the only way that this works is that Rambo agrees to be arrested.
Exactly. Right. Yep.
Right, because, I mean, you know.
But maybe because his colonel's there.
Yeah, and the colonel is like, you know, no, you mess. I mean, he tells him, like, man, you made a mess. You got to deal with it now, you know.
Yeah.
And, So then that leads us into Rambo 2, where he has been in jail, I think, for 5 years, and then they offer him a deal, like, hey, we'll let you out if you'll go, you know, so.
Like I said, I wish I could have maybe watched a little, but then again, do I really? No, I don't, actually. I'm glad I left it at this one. I mean, look, when Rambo 2 came out, I did go see. That's the one that has the girl in it, right? The Vietnamese girl. And he goes over. There's the camp. POWs are still being held there. He goes to free him, yada, yada, yada. At the time, I liked it as a kid because I was really into that, like, playing war and all that kind of stuff. But now I think of it and I go, this is one of those movies where it just kind of should have been left alone as one. I mean, I get it, the franchise, they want to make money, and I'm sure it made a ton of money, and I'm sure there's people that love all of them. I don't know, man. I think it would have been good just as a standalone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it could have been, you know, it just depends on, I think it's one of those things where it depends on what the box office does, which, by the way, I have box office numbers right here for you.
All right.
1982, First Blood brought in $47 million. Which made it the 13th highest earning movie of 1982. I would like you to try to guess any movies that were above. So there are 12 movies that made more than First Blood in 1982.
1982?
Yes.
I don't know.
I'll give you a hint for one. This is the easy one.
I don't like that. This is like when I played, you know, intros and you got really nervous because I would say they're easy.
That was an easy one. This is an easy one. It also stars Sylvester Stallone.
Nighthawk?
No.
No. The Rocky III came out after this, right?
Rocky III, it's the same year.
Oh, was it the same year? I thought it came out after this.
Yeah, Rocky III brought in $124 million. I'll give you another hint. This one co-starred Reese's Pieces.
Oh, man. I just listened to a podcast about that today. E.T. Such a good movie, man. I actually just watched it for the first time. I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but like I watched it for the first time in years, just a few months ago, only because like I know it's a great movie, but I didn't want to cry, man. I don't like getting all emotional.
Yep. I will tell you, off the top of my head, E.T., Close Encounters, The Elephant Man, these are all movies that will definitely make me cry. So when I come up there, we can't watch any of these movies because I will cry. So real quick, top 10 of 1982, starting with number one, is E.T. Then we have Tootsie, Officer and a Gentleman. Number five is Porky's, which... brought in $105 million.
Oh my God, there was a lot of perverts in 1982 going to see that movie.
Then the second half is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Khan!
We both do it. 48 Hours.
Good movie.
Good movie. Poltergeist.
Great movie.
The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Oh, Dolly and yes. Bert.
Yep. And rounding out the top 10, and I will sing any song that you want to hear from it, Annie. Which, by the way, my sister's favorite movie as a child, and we had a copy on VHS. So every time I watched Star Wars, she watched Annie. So I have seen it, I want to say, I mean, I don't know how many dozens of times. I know, unfortunately, I know every song.
Carol Burnett.
That's true. Yeah.
Awesome in that role.
There's some, yeah, First Blood came in at 13. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
There's great movies that year. I didn't realize. Yeah,
well, there's so many good. You know what? I'm just scrolling down here. Obviously, I won't read them all, but number 14, The Toy.
Oh, my God. Jackie Gleason.
Yes, Richard Pryor, yeah. One we just talked about. If you didn't hear the last episode, you want to go back and listen to this. But number 16, Dark Crystal. We have Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, my goodness.
Number 17. Let me see if anything else. Tron, number 22.
You know what? When you, that was going to be my original guess, was Tron. And I was like, yeah. Is that 80? I don't think that's 82. And then I'm going to get an email again saying I'm such a dummy.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Never got into that movie. I've tried, but
really?
Yeah, just never really got into it.
I think you need to fast forward to Phoebe Cates scene when she gets out of that.
I've watched it a couple, two, three times, but the rest of the movie didn't really care for.
Yeah, lots of, man, this was a heck of a movie. You know, everybody says that, I think a lot of retro people say 84, 85 is the best movie or whatever, I mean, best year for movies. Road Warrior, Blade Runner, Creepshow, just going down through this list. There, The Thing, Zapped.
Scott Baio, right?
Yeah.
I would not have guessed that Poltergeist and The Dark Crystal were 1982.
Yeah.
E.T., yes, because I remember I was really just a little squirt when that came out, but I mean, I didn't see Poltergeist as a kid. I, you know, saw caught on HBO as I grew up, but That is actually one of my favorite 80s movies now, and I didn't really even see it till a few years back. My wife and I watched it for Horrified Chicken, and I'm just like, this movie is really good. Really, really good.
I'll throw one last one out here at you. At number 55, Beastmaster.
Oh my goodness. The movie we probably will never do.
There was a couple of movies we said would never. That was that. What was the one movie that at the very beginning of the podcast, there was one movie. Yeah, Top Gun. So,
I think I promised Steve Cherubino I would do it for like episode 100. Unfortunately, I'm not keeping track of what number episode we're on. So,
I don't think Cherubino listens anymore. So
I don't think so either. So I think I'm off the hook.
Let's see. Do I have anything else for you? You know what? I did want to talk about the Rambo lunchbox because I mentioned that on the last episode. And so briefly, the Rambo lunchbox, and I have one, was a metal lunchbox, of course, made by Thermos. You know how most metal lunchboxes had like pictures all the way around that wrapped around?
Yep.
The Rambo one just has camouflage on the sides. And then on the front, it says Rambo, and it has, you know, obviously Rambo. It came out in 85. The lunchbox came out in 1985. So I think it may have been. That's
for the cartoon, I bet.
Yeah, and I don't know when, you know, I should look it up real quick, but when the second movie was. I think that may have been 85 also.
Because I think the cartoon was 84, 85. And they had like a, Coleco, it was Coleco, they had a toy line out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the second Rambo movie is 85 also.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was, you know, more like, I guess, marketing time and pushing it, you know, everything. And the lunchbox, which I'm sure most people have seen, he's standing there holding this, it's like an M60, just like the first movie, with a rocket launcher thing on the end. And there's some helicopters behind him.
Does he have the red bandana on?
Yes. Yes, he does. And the sunset. And the
mullet.
I like to think of it as a stylish do. I wouldn't. I guess it's kind of a mullet.
Whatever. I can see you trying to pull it off.
I would love it. I would love it. My wife would just shave my head in the night. But
I will laugh if you pull up to my house this summer and you get the red bandana and a mullet.
Maybe I'll get a mullet wig and I'll just put it on like whenever I leave the house.
That'd be awesome. So
she doesn't know. But the reason why this lunchbox is famous, I mean, as far as lunchbox collectors go, is that it was the last metal lunchbox that was mass produced. So this was right there. There are plastic ones before this. You know, I have a,
like, but it was transitioned into plastic only after.
Yeah. So this is really the last mass produced metal one until, you know, recently when they started making like throwback ones and type stuff. But this was it. And, a lot of people incorrectly blame it on, you know, there was always this story that
they blame it on the ET game for Atari, don't they?
Yes, that was the problem. They buried a bunch of Rambo lunchboxes
and they were plastic, so they're all still there with all the carts.
No, there's always the story that a kid used one as a weapon, you know, like held it, but that's not really it. It was really. Really, it was just economics that it was cheaper to make them plastic, you know, and I guess there probably were safety, you know, concerns maybe.
I don't think so. I think you nailed it. It's always about money,
right? Because the plastic ones, you just make whatever color and then stick that label on the side and you're done.
And that is part of the problem with the plastic lunch boxes, is that. That's what it was. You'd have colored plastic box with a sticker on there.
Yep.
Where with the metal ones, they were like embossed, right? Like they had texture to them and stuff. Like I don't collect the lunch boxes. I have one that you sent me.
Right.
Dragon's Lair. But and it's awesome, but I just don't have room. I there's lunch boxes I always see. I'm like, oh my God, I don't have room for them, but I want it. And but then I'll come across the plastic ones and, you know, it could be something cool, but I'm like, yeah, but it's just a sticker.
A lot of times I haven't done this yet, but I've thought about this is looking for like a cheap plastic one and just taking the sticker off and then just making my own stickers and changing it in and out, like whatever I want. You know what I mean? Like have a throwback reviews lunchbox or have a whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I have not done that. Here's the thing is I did buy a really crappy one time. I think it was like a Heathcliff one, which I did not want. And I bought it and I was like, when I get home, I'm going to tear it off. And then when I got home, I was like, oh man, it's Heathcliff. I can't do that.
Well, not only that, but you know, what's going to happen is you're going to peel it off and you're going to get like more than 3/4 of it off. And then it rips and sticks on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you buy something and you have to peel that sticky label off and it's coming off so good. And then it just goes, and then you hear that and like half the label is still on there, but it's like the fuzzy part and you can't get it off.
Yep.
That's the problem you would run into.
Probably. So what do you say? You like, I think the takeaway, you like the movie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, the ending was a little bit, you know, whatever, but I thought the rest of the movie was great. I actually really enjoyed watching it. I'm glad that we picked this one.
I could see if they remade it today, there would be changes in the pacing. You know, I think that probably the beginning might be a little bit slower buildup. You'd have to cut down that mine scene. It's just too long of any time where it's the only character on the screen because there's nobody for them to talk to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it just slows things down too much. So I mean, I could see them making some changes, but as far as the story and stuff, I think it still holds up. There's nothing in here that feels super dated.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. I thought the acting was great. I mean, I love seeing the old cars. I definitely say you gotta watch it. I mean, I would assume most people listening to this have seen it at one point, but definitely watch it again. It is, it's a good movie. Definitely a good movie.
know, the only part I probably had with Teasel is Brian Dennehy. When I saw him, immediately the first role I thought of was he was the dad in Tommy Boy.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, that had the heart attack. And remember, he had the wedding. And
I don't remember. And,
So he was Chris Farley's dad that had the heart attack and died.
Wasn't he in Cocoon? That's what I was thinking.
He is in Cocoon, yeah.
I know good old Wilford Brimley was.
You know, I guess this is a sign of a good actor, a great actor, is if the only thing I had seen Dennehy in was this, as Teasel, I wouldn't like him as a person. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He comes off as an actual jerk where you know he's not. He's just a good actor, you know?
Yeah.
But he really... You get that feeling from him that he is a small town, kind of a jerky guy.
He's definitely believable in that role for sure. Yeah. He played it so well.
Did you read? I looked up on the trivia that different people that they had offered or thought about the role of Troutman. Yeah. One of them was Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, now that would. Yeah, how would that play?
I can imagine that. Right, he'd be like chewing his gum, like, yep, you're going to have to let him go.
And then he would turn and look at the camera and raise his eyebrows.
That was more of a Michael Jackson he than a Burt Reynolds he. But yeah, I don't know. I thought he was good. And then what was the Hot Shots? Remember that? Hot Shots and Hot Shots Part 2. Well, Hot Shots was like Top Gun, but Hot Shots Part 2 was a takeoff of Rambo. And it's the same guy. It's Richard Crenna. Okay.
Yeah.
He plays the colonel in that movie as well, which it's always a little weird when you parody yourself, you know. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Thumbs up on this. I like I said, I think it's aged good. I think it's as enjoyable today as it was back then, you know.
Yeah. I had some good, decent comments. I kind of tease it on my own personal Facebook, and people I know are like, oh, yeah, you know, giving quotes and everything. So it's definitely one of those movies that is iconic and people remember, but unfortunately, it just kind of rolled into a couple too many sequels. But
yeah.
Anyways, I mean, there's the cartoon. We didn't really talk a lot about that. I think it was one season. And there was the toy line, but you know, maybe another day when we talk about maybe movie spinoff toy lines and cartoons or something. But other than that, I think that's all I got for Rambo. What about you?
Yeah, same here. I enjoyed it. I kind of want to go watch the other ones a little bit, but I know that I'm going to be disappointed. So I may just let it ride at this first one.
Yeah. The more I set it on here, where I was like, I wish I could. I'm going, nah, really, I don't. And I'm probably not going to. I'm not going to watch it. So, all right, man. Where can people find you if they want to hear more Rob O'Hara?
Hey, just come over to RobOHara.com. You can find whatever I'm working on. You can find links to my podcasts. And there's links to my social media, which is at Facebook.com/RobOHara or on Twitter at Commodork.
All right. And you want to hear any of my other podcasts that I am currently doing or have done, as well as those social media links, you can go to AllDutchPods.com. And that will have everything that I'm involved in over there as well. So until next time, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you later.